Take five improv artists, a crack team of comedy writers, renowned musical composers. What do you get?
Professor Jameson was bitten by a radioactive woman.
Should I take you to the hospital?
No, Willie, I don't want you to solve the problem. I want you to listen and empathize.
The Irrelevant Show.
Starring
Marianne Copethorne,
Neil Grawn,
Mark Meer,
Jenna O'Connor,
and Donovan Workin.
At cbc.ca/irrelevantshow.
I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current.
The report is clear. Prescription drug abuse is an issue we all have a responsibility to address. I've been saying all along, no one group can solve this issue. We owe it to individuals, to families, and to communities struggling with drug addictions who are looking to us to make the much needed changes.
Canada's health minister says she recognizes it as a complex task to solve the problem of prescription drug abuse. But Leona Aglukkaq presented a plan yesterday aimed at preventing doctors from prescribing painkillers indiscriminately and getting more help to addicts. It's estimated more than 1,000 Canadians will die this year as a result of taking prescription painkillers, most from overdoses.
Consider a moment if 500 people a year were dying in Ontario from E. coli, or listeriosis, or some other preventable condition, how the public would be up in arms demanding change. So why isn't that the case here? We had 500 reported deaths around opiates in Ontario alone last year. Simply put, addiction issues are largely shunned and ignored by the public. But that silence is breaking, and this strategy will help us better understand the nature of the addiction, the means by which we can support people, prevent it, and treat those who are affected.
Well, that is Michelle Perron of the Canadian Centre on Substance Abuse, who says the changes should help individuals, families, and whole communities struggling with drug addiction. 62-year-old Vancouver resident Candace Platter is an addictions counsellor today. 25 years ago, she became addicted to prescription drugs, painkillers aimed at helping her battle Crohn's disease.
Hello?
Oh, hi, Candace there,
please. Yes, speaking. Well, I am taking some new clients, not too many right now. When I was diagnosed, they didn't know really what to do with me, and I was quite sick. Doctors like to be helpful, and they didn't know how to be helpful. So what they did was prescribe a lot of medication for me, and they gave me as much Valium and Demerol, which would probably be equivalent to OxyContin today, and codeine, as much of those kinds of drugs as I wanted. And it was like week after week, they'd refill my prescriptions. Week after week, month after month, years of this. I reached a bottom with all of that. I was so depressed, actually became suicidal, and I started thinking about how I could kill myself, and that really scared me because I had the means, I had enough pills to do it. I'm not advocating that people never use painkiller, but people need to understand that they have to be careful with it because they will become addicted to it if they keep using it on a regular basis, even if they use it the way it's prescribed. That's the problem.
Well, that is Vancouver Addictions Counselor Candace Platter. Controlling pain and risking addiction is a delicate balance, and doctors struggle with it. Dr. Brian Goldman has watched the struggle play out over the years as an emergency room physician. Dr. Brian Goldman is also, of course, the host of White Coat Black Art on CBC Radio, and he's with me in Toronto. Good morning.
Good morning.
Give us the shorthand on what's being recommended here, Brian.
There are 13 recommendations, mainly preventing prescription drug-related harms to individuals, families, and communities, doing things like promoting appropriate prescribing and dispensing practices amongst healthcare practitioners, physicians, pharmacists, timely, equitable access to a range of effective treatment options for pain and addictions treatment, so very important, a pan-Canadian surveillance system so that we can actually get numbers and know how many cases of abuse and break it down by age the way they do with the National Institute on Drug Abuse in the United States.
Established. Because right now we don't know, right?
We don't know, and that's a huge problem in this country. They're also recommending establishing prescription monitoring programs in each and every province so that they can gather data in real time and find trends in a hurry and find physicians, frankly, who are overprescribing.
Why do we need a national strategy? Talk to me a little bit more about how serious this is.
The problem is huge. Canada's rate of use of opioids has increased by 203% between 2000 and 2010. Deaths, as we've already heard in the introduction, are on the rise. All of the issues related to abuse, whether it's pharmacy break-ins, crime, that's gone up as a result. Lives ruined as a result. And right now, whether we are top or number one or number two in terms of per capita consumers of strong opioids, it's a huge problem, and it's a problem that didn't exist 20 years ago.
So how did we get here? Why do we have this problem?
It happened because of a number of things. The first thing that happened was that there was an introduction of products that could treat people with chronic pain, and we started off with one long-acting opioid that was MS-Contin, and then codeine-Contin and OxyContin and hydromorphone-Contin and Duragesic, the fentanyl patch, and along with that. In the late 1980s, if you went back 30 years ago, it would have been heresy to prescribe narcotics to people with chronic pain. It was considered the royal road to addiction. And in fact, if you went back 70 years, you'd find that treating people with cancer pain with narcotics was also considered a taboo. What broke that open were some studies in the late 1980s, palliative care doctors, cancer pain specialists who began to dabble in treating people with chronic non-cancer pain with narcotics. Mm. They published some case series, and it was like a bright light. It was like, we love as a society a new idea. This was a big new idea, that you could treat people with chronic pain safely with opioids and that they wouldn't necessarily become addicted.
Okay, but this is going on in Western medicine. How come we're sort of at the top of the heap now in terms of abuse?
We don't know. And I want to quote something that Benedict Fisher, who's one of the brightest minds in this country, he is a professor of health sciences at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, BC. He's doing a lot of the studies that are looking at the problem of prescription drug abuse. Yesterday, he said, the one part I'm missing is a clear perspective on what on a population level is driving our extraordinarily high levels of prescription opioid consumption in this country. If he doesn't know, I don't know. And that's the thing we really, really need to find out.
So how much blame do doctors deserve for the abuse of prescription drugs?
Well, they don't make people addicts. That's part of your genetics. It's part of your social circumstances if you have a psychological need. On the other hand, there's no question that of the opioid-related deaths, two-thirds of the people who died saw a doctor within a month of their death, and on average 15 times per year. This is data that Irfan Dalla has prepared, certainly if the opioids that were available were not prescribed by as many physicians as they are, then there's no question that the scale of this wouldn't be as great as it is.
It could, because obviously there are those people who manage to get multiple prescriptions and things like that, but we're not talking – that's not solely the issue here. Obviously there are other people who are taking these drugs for pain management and then they just get addicted.
That happens, and clearly, we didn't know the numbers. If you went back 20 years, it looked, if you looked at the original case series that suggested that this was relatively safe, that it might be 5%, 10%, that it might be as many as 33%. I don't think anybody suspected at the time, and I think if they did, this wouldn't have happened.
Well, I have a clip I want to play for you. This is Dr. Joel Lekshin. He's a professor in the School of Health Policy and Management at York University. He's a critic of the relationship between pharmaceutical companies and the medical profession.
The drug companies aggressively market their products to doctors, and the drug companies wouldn't be spending it unless they thought that they were getting a good return on their investment. The more that doctors get their information from drug companies, the worse they are as prescribers. So they prescribe more often, they prescribe more expensively, and the quality of their prescribing is worse.
How much blame do pharmaceutical companies deserve for the overprescription of opioids?
There's no question that pharmaceutical companies are in business to make money, and they want to promote their products. There's no question they will, in doing that, they will provide the best image for their products, which means that if there is data, if there's information that accentuates the positive, they're going to do that, and they're going to kind of not spend as much time talking about the negative or the adverse effects. I would say that a lot of the studies that have shown that the scale of abuse is greater have come more recently in the last few years after the genie was out of the bottle. But I don't disagree with anything that Joe Lukshin has just said, that there's no question that pharmaceutical companies do spend a lot of money, whether it's on advertising, whether it's promoting key opinion leaders, and I was one of them.
I was just going to say, you've had your own experience with this.
Yeah.
What got you working? You were working with Purdue, I guess.
Primarily Purdue.
OxyContin.
That's right. And I started off giving talks on prescription drug abuse, drug seekers. In fact, my first documentary at CBC was on drug seekers. And so that's how I got into it. And over a period of time, I started to have, you know, I saw the literature as it was developing, Russ Portnoy and others saying that it was relatively safe. I began to treat patients with chronic non-cancer pain, and I actually saw some benefit. And around that time, I was approached by Purdue Pharma, and I gave quite a few speeches. I gave quite a few seminars. I was never given a script to read. I was given, you know, I was said, here's the lecture, go speak. And I spoke about what I wanted to speak about and prepared a database of information along with others, Roman Jovi, for instance. And,
they would pay for
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, you're not going to do that for free. We were paid to do it. I wrote some book chapters, and I also appeared in some videos. And
when did you pull back? When did you decide not to do that?
About, you know, it was a slow process. I was doing less and less over the last 8 or 9 years, and I would say that I completely severed roughly 5 years ago. And what turned it for me, I saw the scale of abuse. I was watching the death rates go up year after year, and I'd seen it in the United States. I gave a lot of talks for the National Association of Drug Diversion Investigators. I never stopped doing that. And I was watching with growing alarm going back 10, 12 years. I wrote an editorial in the Canadian Medical Association Journal in 1998. So it was one of the few studies that actually documented the sale of prescription drugs on the street. And I said, look out, OxyContin's coming. And it did. And that was back in 1998.
So do these recommendations go far enough?
They, as platitudes, they're wonderful. But I didn't see a price tag associated with these. Prescription monitoring program, which I think is a wonderful idea right across the country to establish trends, that's going to cost megabucks. And I'd like to see a price tag before that happens. The other problem is, what do you do about the people who are addicted? You have to find treatment programs for them. You have to, and if you don't have them, where are they going to go? If you can't just snap your fingers and end the OxyContin problem by banning the drug. And by the way, the federal government has proudly announced this. Why did they allow generic OxyContin? What's that all about?
That's a question to ask the health minister, I guess.
Yeah.
Brian Goldman, thank you.
You're welcome.
Brian Goldman is an emergency room physician. He is the host of White Coat Black Art on CBC Radio, and he's here in our Toronto studio. Mary Lynch is the director of research at the Pain Management Unit at the QE2 Hospital Health Sciences Center in Halifax. She's also a professor of anesthesia, psychiatry, and pharmacology at Dalhousie University. Dr. Lynch is concerned that this national strategy to curb the misuse of prescription drugs could harm people with a legitimate need for such drugs. She joins us from Halifax. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, so tell us what your concerns are.
Well, I'd like to start by letting you know that the Canadian Pain Society fully supports the principles of the National Strategy Document on Prescription Drug Misuse. So let's start with that. We fully support it. The only concern that we want to make sure people attend to is that as these recommendations are implemented, that they be done in a way that it doesn't hurt people living with pain. Because don't forget, opioids are one of the best tools we have to treat moderate to severe pain. So we've got to make sure that these are implemented in a way that it doesn't diminish access to these drugs when we need them.
Now, do you agree with Brian Goldman's assessment, though, that the pendulum is essentially swung too far in the direction of addressing pain with opioids?
It's true that there are many cases of overuse of the opioids, and we have recognized this in society over the past number of years. Brian did a beautiful job articulating that. In fact, before these recommendations came out, there was another very good initiative that came out with the National Opioid Guidelines use recommendations, and physicians are already using those. So there are already many safety parameters in place for the safe use of these. But I think these recommendations go even further, and we were most happy to see that the National Advisory Committee clearly stated that improved education, equitable access to care, and research regarding pain, mental health, and addictions were emphasized throughout the document. That is all good.
Is it possible to deal with prescription drug abuse without limiting access to those who legitimately need medication?
It is not only possible, it is essential. In order for us to say that we live in a moral, ethical society, we have to help people with suffering and with pain where we are able to do so. So in implementing these recommendations, we must remain an ethical and moral society.
Well, you know, I'm wondering, so how do you do that on an individual basis? Someone who needs very strong and addictive drugs for pain, it must be very frightening to know you have to take that and to know you could get sucked into an addiction.
Well, again, it's not frightening. It's just a matter of doing your job the right way. We, as physicians, we now have access to the National Opioid Guidelines. And even before that, physicians that had been educated about pain and appropriate pain management, and by the way, that's one of the big problems that needs to be addressed. Many physicians aren't educated in this area. But there are guidelines that you can use to assure that you're using these medications safely and that you're properly screening your patients in a way that, first of all, you identify risks before you even start the medications. And if risk factors are there, but the patient has serious pain that you feel requires an opioid, you can put appropriate structure and safety in place so that you can still use these medications in a way that is safe and still relieve suffering.
You have been working on a national pain strategy. How would it differ from the strategy on prescription drugs?
Actually, we were delighted that many of the principles of the national pain strategy are actually embedded in this series of recommendations that have just come out. Basically, the broad principles are to improve education, access to care, and research for pain. And pain is mentioned throughout this document, so we were delighted with that.
Are there simply, though, too many people being prescribed these opioids? I mean, would that just have to be cut down in actual numbers?
It's very difficult to say, and I think Benedict Fisher has said it beautifully in various publications, that we need more information about the situation. I think there probably is a place for decreasing opioid prescribing in certain individuals, and that's what the National Opioid Guidelines are all about, to identify up front the appropriate people or the appropriate situations where you use these medications. But I think one of the things we really need to underline is right now our healthcare professionals are not being appropriately educated in our medical schools, in our nursing and undergraduate schools, and then in our graduate programs on appropriate pain management. And that absolutely needs to be done. And we, again, we're delighted to see that this was embedded in these recommendations. Now, Brian said, I haven't seen a price tag. And that's true. Not only is the prescription monitoring system going to cost some money, but in order to assure that we have appropriate education, access to care, and guidelines across the country for pain management and also mental health and addictions, we do need a very good national strategy that is done in a collaborative fashion with all of the appropriate content experts involved in order to roll this out properly. And I think this is a first step in that direction, and we're delighted.
Okay. Well, Mary Lynch, thanks for speaking with us.
A pleasure.
That is Dr. Mary Lynch. She's the Director of Research and Pain Management Unit at the QE2 Medical or Health Sciences Center in Halifax. She's also a professor of anesthesia, psychiatry, and pharmacology at Dalhousie University, and she was in Halifax. If you have thoughts on what you're hearing on this or any other story today, go to the website, cbc.ca/thecurrent. Click on the contact link. Call us toll-free anytime, 1-877-287-7366. We are facebook.com/cbcthecurrent or tweet us. We are at The Current CBC. When we come back, Trinity Western University forbids activities such as gossip, drinking, and smoking. That's not why so many of Canada's law students and lawyers oppose its plan for a new law school, however. I'll talk to the woman who is leading the charge for the new school in spite of it. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current.
Looking for more CBC podcasts? Go to cbc.ca/podcasting.